From Los Angeles, California, this is the Writer's Strike Chronicles, and I'm Tanya Barnes. Hello, everybody. Today is Tuesday, February 12th, 2008, day 100 of the Writer's Strike. In today's episode, I revisit with writers Brooks Wachtel, Bill Taub, and Steve Leva. Today's series of recordings are unique because I think only one other time, that interview I did with Asterios Kokkinos, that it was actually not recorded on the picket line. That's because there was no picketing scheduled at the time of these recordings, because pickets are suspended until the WGA membership votes to either end or continue the strike. So the following two interviews were done in a conference room at the Guild's headquarters on Fairfax and 3rd in Los Angeles, right near the farmers market. The last interview we'll hear was done at Jerry's Deli in Studio City earlier in the morning. Since today's episode is probably the longest one I've done for the Strike Chronicles to date, let's go straight to it. Here we go. We'll begin with Brooks Wachtel at WGA headquarters. Take three. I've had serious technical issues. I'm here with Brooks Wachtel.
I was younger when we started this interview.
All I've been trying to get from him, and we've had three takes, is I'm trying to get the story about what happened on Saturday night at the big meeting with the big vote. Would you please tell the story again for me, please?
Take three. I don't know. My memory is starting to go fuzzy now. Saturday night. Well, let me start off by saying getting there was not half the fun. I met some friends, two other writers. In fact, I'll give you their names because everyone should get credit. It was Bob Skier and Marv Wolfman. We left Studio City at 6 o'clock, got to the freeway off-ramp at 7, and got to the parking lot about 7:50.
What time did the meeting start?
It was supposed to start at 7. As near as I can tell, it probably started about 7:45. So by the time we got in there, there were no seats left on the ground floor. We were scooted up to the gallery. And Patrick Barone had already finished his comments, so I didn't get to hear what Patrick had to say. David Young was talking when I arrived, but I did hear most of his report.
What did he say?
David Young gave a very thorough, very honest estimation of the contract, the pros and cons, the good, the bad, why they did what they did. He explained that we didn't get everything we asked for. We may not have even got everything we deserved. But it was the best deal we could possibly get. And knowing the negotiating committee, knowing David, knowing Patrick, I believe that's probably an entirely accurate statement.
Okay. I've had another guest break down the points of the deal. If there's things that are jumping out at you about the deal, I'd like to know about it. But overall, I really want to know how you feel about it.
There's a line in Inherit the Wind, spoken by Spencer Tracy's character Henry Drummond. He says, I've been a lawyer long enough to know there's no total victories. And in a negotiation, there is no total victory. I was sad that we didn't pursue animation or reality or the DVD bumps, but I understand why we didn't. We looked to the future. The internet is a vast, unknown country, and now we've made our beachhead, we're moving inland. It's going to be ours. We have jurisdiction. We will get further jurisdiction. No one knows what that land is going to have in it, but whatever it is, we're going to be part of it.
If you look at the experience of going on strike as a big movie, can you tell me what your audience experience was like?
It was more like an interactive game.
How so?
Well, I wasn't just sitting there passively. We were active. I did interviews. I picketed. I didn't picket as much as I really should have or wanted to. I had some other things, life problems I had to contend with where I live. But it was very interactive. There was input given. I mean, I've worked with David Young on the Animation Writers Caucus. I've been a member of that for over a decade. And for many years, he was the head of organizing at the Guild before he got his current position. I think he's terrific. I'd emailed him. And even in the midst of this, he would find time to email me back. I didn't abuse that.
Yeah.
But it was interactive. people that I met on the picket line, the discussions that went on, not only on the picket line, but online. It was a very involving experience in the sense that while a movie can involve you emotionally, it's a passive experience. Mm-hmm. This was an extremely active experience.
Participatory. Yeah.
Very participatory. And the way the guild is structured, very democratic.
Yes, I have noticed that. I found out that the contract could have been just approved or something like that, but that the members of the guild wanted to take it to vote. Can you explain that a little further for me?
I think the leadership of the guild wanted to make sure that this contract and the, well, the contract has to be approved by the membership.
Okay.
That's in our laws.
So it was the strike to vote, or to end the strike part?
To end the strike was put to the membership, because I believe this leadership wants to make sure that everything they do is done at the behest and approval of the membership. That it's a completely democratic organization with lots of input. That we may have leadership, but the leadership, as it should be in a democracy, is there for the consent and the approval of the governed.
So what was the feeling you came away with on Saturday night? What did it feel like emotionally? Take me there. As an actor, I want to know.
Well, I witnessed something that I probably will never live to see again. 3,500 to 4,000 writers acting with unanimity, in approval, in lockstep, practically no dissension, practically no hostility, really. It was quite a sight to see an entire union of individuals, because as you know, trying to get writers to agree on anything is a little bit like herding cats. But here they were, thousands of them agreeing, thousands of them giving standing ovations to the leadership, proud to be writers, satisfied with the deal, and realizing that we've won a tremendous victory. Again, not a total victory, not everything we've wanted, but if you start with the fact that the negotiations began with management asking for massive rollbacks and offering nothing, and ended with no rollbacks and jurisdiction over a new media, I think that's victory enough for one negotiation.
Will you please tell me how you're going to vote?
Probably with an X in the little box.
Okay.
No.
Nice. Are you going to answer that question, or should I move on?
Yes. I do intend to vote to approve the contract.
I see. Okay. Last time I saw you, you said your crystal ball had gotten dark. Would you please take a look at the crystal ball and tell me, predict the future of what the contract vote will be like?
If I was Nostradamus instead of a screenwriter, I could probably give you a better answer. I don't know what the internet has in store for us. Nobody does. That's the question that's keeping executives up at night and was the principal driving force behind our strike. But whatever it is, whether it's big or small, whether it's a fortune or just a little bit of money, writers are going to be a part of it. They're going to be fairly compensated for it. I also think that, as I'm sure you've heard from many other people, the internet offers writers a chance to bypass the studios, to bypass the distribution system, and to get their work out there as they see it, which for screenwriters is practically unknown. Maybe it will be something that will allow writers to get their visions on the screen without a lot of interference and changes from all of the other people who many times are not qualified to change those visions.
Okay, and my final question is, for future generations, 20 years from now, when we have another disruptive technology change how we do business and create art and content on some medium that's still to be understood or named, what advice do you have to your brothers and sisters, to your family on the line, in future generations?
As Mr. Douglas said, agitate, agitate, agitate. Hang in there, be solid, fight for what you believe in. No matter how difficult the cause is, even if it seems like a lost one, remember that as a writer, it all starts with you, and you have tremendous power. No one is going to admit that you have that power, though maybe the internet will change that. But in the year 2007 and 2008, we pretty much shut down Hollywood. We caused major disruptions. We cost billions, and we got the attention of the world. And ultimately, we got the main thing we were asking for. And 40 years ago, a similar thing happened and created residuals. Nobody gives you anything. You have to fight for it. And you have to fight hard for it. And you have to believe in it. And as Churchill said, you must fight them on the beaches, fight them in the towns, fight them in the hills, and never surrender.
Thank you very much.
You're more than welcome.
That was Brooks Wachtel. Coming up is Bill Taub. Let's roll sound.
Okay, I'm Bill Taub, and I showed up because I was supposed to have the photo shoot for United Hollywood. And I met you again.
Yeah, I know. What a treat.
What a pleasant surprise.
Okay, so can you tell me a story about, because I'm not a guild member, and I want to know what happened on Saturday night. Can you tell me a story?
Yeah, Saturday night, I was really, because I was around in the 88 strike, and it was very contentious, that last meeting. So I was really showing up expecting the worst, expecting to have a real brouhaha and a real contentious meeting with the pros and the cons and all that kind of stuff, and it wasn't that at all. I was totally surprised. It was like a love fest. It was like, as I said to somebody, I said, for a while there, literally and figuratively, I felt like I was at the State of the Union speech, where every 30 seconds, people were giving everybody a standing ovation and standing up and cheering, and I'm going, for what? For what? I don't quite get it, but obviously the rest of the room, I guess, was very relieved or quite got it, and they loved the board. They were very, complimentary towards the board, to the fact that the strike is over, to whatever it might be, and I'm sitting there and I'm listening to the specifics, and I'm trying to be non-judgmental. I'm trying to just soak it all in because we really didn't get a chance to see what we got in specifics. And a lot of the things that were told to me by various board and negotiating committee members on the line when I'd ask questions, because they did show up to the line during the course of the strike and certainly in the last week, was not what we were presented with. And I felt kind of snookered. And I have a feeling that...
What were you told, and then what was actually said at the meeting?
Well, there are a couple things that were told. One, we were told that, negotiations with the AMTP are very difficult. And just because you agree to a point with the CEOs, until you really codify it in contract language, they could take it away, they could change it, they could do anything. So unless it's totally codified, it doesn't mean anything. And we said, well, what happens if it's not codified by Saturday? Because this was like 4 days in which they had to codify the whole thing. And they said, well, then they will not ask for a vote. They will not ask for... Well, it turns out the whole thing has not been codified. And things like the favored nations clause, we were told, was a handshake deal with Peter Chernin, and that hasn't been put in specifics yet. And yet they went through with the vote. And that was wrong. I was told on the line, somebody had asked, and I remember a friend of mine asked the question about, can DVDs be put back on the table? And we were told, no, DVDs are not, we took it off, we can't put it back on. So I followed up with the question and said, okay, well, SAG has still got DVDs on the table, and SAG's negotiations are coming up. If SAG betters the DVD formula, does it revert back to us? And they said yes.
That's what you mean by favored nations, correct?
Right. In other words, like, if one guild betters what the other guild got, it supposedly returns back to the other guild. Now, as was said at the, which I thought was very cynical, he said, well, they're very good at honoring favored nations in terms of taking away rather than giving. Well, that's not what I was told on the line. And, we had a chance. I thought of, look, we took it off the table. We can't put it back on the table. They snookered us on that. SAG has still got it. SAG's strong. If SAG betters it, it'll revert back to us. And I was told, yes, that's the case. Well, that's not the case, because part of the deal is that we have no favored nations in terms of the DVD issue. The only favored nations we have is in terms of new media. If SAG happens to better what we got in terms of new media, that will revert back to us. But anything else, no. So in those instances, I really feel like I'm not giving bad intention to anybody.
Okay.
I'm just saying it's confusion, it's strong-arming, whatever you want to call it. We didn't get what I felt we were promised.
But my understanding is you didn't expect to get everything.
Absolutely. I felt that reality, animation, all those things, I never expected those to be able to go down. I thought our issues were always about DVD and new media. Okay, and I was told at the beginning, first of all, I questioned why did they take the DVDs off the table so fast, and they said they had to. I said, this was the head of the negotiating committee that I spoke to. He said they had to. If we would have kept DVDs on the table, it would have meant a 9-month strike. At which point I said to him, I said, well, what you're telling me then is we have no leverage. And I said, well, I guess that's right. And I said, well, if you have no leverage on the DVDs, what makes you think you have so much leverage on new media or in general? And obviously. And this was at the beginning when they first took the DVDs off the table. But that was a huge issue. Mm-hmm. The DVDs, you know, we were snookered for 20 years on that issue. I was around in 88 when we made this, you know, good faith deal that showed a lot of bad faith. So I felt that, you know, at least we had a way of redeeming it because we were in alliance with SAG. But that was taken away from us.
So on the one hand, you're saying it's a big love fest on Saturday night. And then how would you cast yourself?
I would cast myself as someone who was working on a pilot before this started. I have no idea if the pilot will still be around. I would cast myself as fortunate that I am not in a financial position where I have to worry about what happens. If it were a question of doing the right thing, I would turn the deal down. And I certainly objected to the concept of the board being able to lift the restrictions on the strike and before the contract was ratified.
Can you clarify that for me, please?
Absolutely. And this is something that came as a shock to many of us. When one of the members of the board, and I don't remember which one, came to speak to us on the line, I was at Fox most of the time, they mentioned that the Saturday meeting was going to be an informational meeting, filling us in on the details of the agreement, and also to take the temperature of the room. And we said, what do you mean take the temperature of the room? Well, it turns out that if they felt that there was overwhelming support, because somewhere along the line, somebody promised somebody that people would be back to work by Monday, you know, or else the deal was going to be taken off the table. That was the strong arming. If it looked like it was overwhelming support, then the board would recommend lifting the restrictions on meaning no strike and sending people back to Monday, and they did not need the membership approval for that. I felt that was absolutely wrong. I felt that, first of all, the people at the meeting would be maybe one-third of the membership at best. So say 3,000 show up, and there are 10,000 members. Why should the 3,000 speak for the 10,000, even if they are to support it or not support it, or whichever way it would go? I also felt that, look, these are supposed to be private votes. These are confidential votes. Why should we, in a public meeting, have to say yay or nay, and I'm not saying whichever way you go with it, in front of everybody? The board obviously grappled with this for a while, and they did do the right thing in the sense that they are, even though the board has the right to do it legally, which a lot of us didn't know, they decided to give the membership 48 hours, which is until this Wednesday, to check in and vote on whether the board should lift the restriction. That's got nothing to do with ratifying the contract. That has to do with sending people back to work. The ratification of the contract will take, or rejection of the contract will take another 2 or 3 weeks. So the worst case scenario, and I'm not saying this is going to happen,
okay. But
the worst case scenario is the board lifts the restriction, sends everybody back to work, and the contract is rejected. That creates a problem that I do not know what happens then.
Okay.
And what the board did, and I think what the management did, was whatever promise they made, they sent the showrunners back to work on Monday.
Today?
Yep.
Yeah,
okay. So
what does that mean?
What that means is that people are back at work before even the board was given the permission to lift the restriction or not lift the restriction, which they said they were going to do. So our vote to Wednesday to say lift the restriction, well, the showrunners are already back to work. You know, and the writing staffs are already back to work. Those hyphenates, as we call them,
okay. Because
they're covered. And that's the separate vote from do we ratify the contract or do we not ratify the contract, which will take weeks.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying that. Okay. Did you finish your thought?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think if I explained it, then I finished it.
Yeah. Okay. What do you want people to understand at this time? Because this is today's Monday, so this episode's going to go up tonight. What do you want them to know going into tomorrow and the vote? And that could be people who don't know shit about the strike and also writers and SAG and all that.
Look, I know there's a great deal of financial suffering, and you know because we've talked about it a lot, of people who are not writers, not guild members, people who are in very dire financial straits because of the strike and the length of the strike, and I have tremendous empathy and sympathy for them. A strike throws people out of work. I mean, what's the surprise? That's the way it is. It's unfortunate. I wish there was another way to settle issues other than striking. I do not think that what we got out of this strike so far, having stayed out as long as we have, if I'm just looking at our self-interest, was enough. I think that the DVD thing was criminal, and the fact that they took the Favored Nations thing away from us, and they agreed to that. I think the fact that they got the board to agree to lift the restrictions before the membership had a chance to vote or not vote, and I'm not saying they wouldn't accept it, but this rush to save the television season, which I understand for both sides. You know, I mean, writers want to finish their pilots or their seasons or whatever, as much of the season as they can. But this is the time when we're first getting the most leverage we can possibly get. Why cave now? Obviously, if you've got somebody's, neck in a sling, that's not the time to give up. I also think that the whole concept that they tried to ram down our throats, which I don't believe in this whole concept of we got distributors gross and a percentage of distributors gross, which was the big plus over the DGA contract. Well, they put a cap on that, which in essence is basically saying it's a flat fee. You know, they say you've got distributors gross, except it can't exceed this amount. All right, so I love to say to my agent, you've got 10% of whatever I make up to $1,000. All right, and so it's however you dress it up, it's a flat fee. But they're saying distributors gross, distributors gross, distributors gross. It would be if there was no cap on it. All right, with a cap on it, it's a flat fee. Can't exceed this amount no matter what happens, right? And it's on a computed value, which is what's going on. So I don't really believe that a lot of what was told to us was, I understand the spin, and I understand that, that they had to make the decisions they made. And I just have a feeling that the AMPTP was very strong. Put it to the leadership that you're going to take this now or forever go begging. And I think they bought into it. And I don't believe that. I suggested, personally for me, that if the Oscars were such a big thing, give a waiver to the Oscars. Give a waiver to the Oscars and say we're not lifting the whole TV season or movie season or whatever it is, because that's the only leverage we have. So we'll show good faith, give a waiver to the Oscars, allow that to go on because the Globes did hurt, but we're not lifting the whole thing until we either get more or this is ratified or rejected by the Guild. So that's my personal position.
So will you share with me how you're going to vote?
Yes, on the two-part vote, and I'm sure, I can say this because I'm sure I'm going to lose on it, but I'm sorry to say, I do not like the way it was handled by the Guild itself, mm-hmm. and I've said that from the beginning, so that I am going to vote no on lifting the restriction before the contract is ratified, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure yet on how I'm going to vote on the contract. I might very well vote to ratify the contract, as I said, because I really empathize with all the people who are suffering because of our being out of work, but I'm going to say let the membership either vote or reject the contract before you lift the restriction.
Okay, my final question is, 20 years from now, when the Guild goes on strike again for another disruptive technology that fucks up the way we do business and do creativity, what advice do you have to those people on the line?
Well, it's the same advice that I gave to the people on this line because I was around in 88. I said, these things have nothing to do with what's right, what's fair, what's just, or anything like that. It has to do with whatever leverage and power you have, and that's all it's about. And I said, quite frankly, my feeling is, as writers, as the Writers Guild, we do not have the leverage and power to get what we want. We are a slow bleed, as I call it, where the actors SAG are a stake through the heart. If the actors go on strike, the business shuts down in 24 hours. If the writers go on strike, it takes 4 months before it starts taking effect and really strangling them, which is when they start to say, okay, this is the deal, take it or leave it.
What's the mechanics of that? Why you say that?
Because scripts and writers, they can do without them. They'll either get scabs or they gave waivers to Leno and to all these people who are going on the air, and don't tell me they're not working with writers. They're doing their full shows, all right? And, it's sort of like what happened with the Globes. That's a perfect example. Had the actors said, we're not crossing the picket line and not showing up, there would have been a Globes. They don't care that they didn't have writers. They'll muddle through without the writers. It was the fact that the actors didn't show up that created the Globes to go down. And the same thing would have happened with the Oscars. If the actors say we're not showing up, they would have gone along fine without the writers. And in terms of television series, they'll do the reality show, they'll do whatever they can, which, hurts the writers in the long run, and they'll get along. They'll put something on the air. They can squeeze the writers. As I equate it, it's like sitting down to play poker with a millionaire. They're going to outbet you every time. So my advice 20 years from now, which is what I suggested this time, is make sure you've got the leverage. I don't think you have the leverage. Hopefully in 20 years, and what will come out of this, is that there will be some alliance formed between all the creative unions so that at least they realize we have to work at this industry together. because individually we'll just be picked apart and we have no power. And hopefully the alliance will be split up too, because in a way that's a collusive organization. So who knows that in 20 years' time some of these issues won't be addressed, won't be corrected. I'd love to see the town cooperate and say, look, we're all in this together. It's like, you know, let's all see how we can make the business better together for everybody, not just have this adversarial relationship.
Okay, throw it ahead in some, what, a couple months to SAG. Any advice to SAG?
My advice to SAG, I don't know if the town has the stomach for it, but my advice to SAG is I hope you really better what we got. I really do. And if that means you have to threaten to go on strike, I hate that as a weapon, but I don't know any other weapon at this point that anybody has. I would suggest that you do it, because I think that there is far more to be had than what we got. And if any union has the power to get that, if any guild has the power to get that, certainly it's not the DGA. And obviously we showed our mettle. I think SAG is the one that's really carrying the bazooka and really can, you know, hold the gun to their heads. So I would say go for it, and you'd have my support.
You'd walk the line with SAG?
Absolutely. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, some of the people who walked the line with us, I mean, like the pilots union walked the line with us, and they were telling us how horrible it is, you know, in terms of the airline industry. All right. There's got to be a way of saying, look, we're all in this together. And as the pilots pointed out to me, these particular pilots were from United, they were saying Southwest Airlines is the most profitable airline, and they treat their employees well. They are the highest paid employees in the airline industry, and they make a fortune. So it shows it's possible. And I hope for that in our industry.
Thank you very much, Bill. It's great seeing you again.
Good. Thank you.
That was Bill Taub at WGA headquarters. Our final interview today was done at Jerry's Famous Deli over breakfast earlier today with Steve Leyva. Here we go. Okay, as always, the sound quality on these things is really compromised. There's a lot of dirty noise. I really one day would love to do these interviews in a sound booth.
Yes.
I'm here with Steve Leyva. Steve, can you tell us where we are and what we're doing today?
We're at Jerry's Deli in Studio City, which is very show busy and always has been. You see, I think when Seinfeld was being made, after every episode, the whole crew came here and the cast and all that. And Larry, we were talking about Larry Miller earlier, comic. He'll be here a lot. You see a lot of comics here, actors. So it's very much of Hollywood, despite being in Studio City. But Studio City is called Studio City because there's studios here.
I grew up in the Valley. I used to call it Studiosity.
Studiosity, that's good.
All right, so what's going on today, and set it up for what's actually going to happen tomorrow, please.
Well, we are at Monday, the 11th. The membership is in the middle of voting whether to end the strike. That vote will take place tomorrow, either via proxy ballot or you go to the WGA Theater and vote. And I think the membership will vote to end the strike. We are not picketing today. That's why I can be here at Jerry's with you instead of online at CBS Radford. So we will vote on that. I think that vote will carry. The strike will be ended. Then we need to vote on the contract itself, or ratify as the term is. That'll happen in 10 days, maybe 2 weeks. They need to, you know, that's a process that takes some time. And I think that ratification will pass, you know, by a large majority. And then everything will be over.
When are people going to go back to work?
If Tuesday night we have a yes vote to end the strike, they'll go back to work on Wednesday.
Okay, worst case scenario, what happens if it doesn't get ratified?
If it doesn't get ratified, or if we don't vote to end the strike?
Then
they would order us back on the picket line.
And when would that start?
Wednesday. But, I mean, I'm assuming, I'm not calling the shots on that, but I think that's highly unlikely. And I think the ratification of the contract is going to happen. I think it's highly unlikely that we would get a no vote on that.
I'm hearing a lot of chatter that this is all coming down because of the Oscars. What about the Oscars?
Well, it's all coming, you mean that it's coming to a conclusion?
Yes.
Because of the Oscars? I think the threat of the Oscars not happening became a bullet in our arsenal. We proved we could do it with the Golden Globes. The Oscars, if it didn't happen, could cost ABC $100 million, people have said. And it's a huge promotional platform for Hollywood in general, for the particular films that have been nominated. So that's a big deal. Plus, it would just depress the town. So, yeah, it was a bullet, and we were willing to use it.
How are you feeling today? I actually want to know.
I feel great. I think what happened in this strike was unavoidable because the other side simply would not really negotiate with us. Because the negotiations started officially last July. A lot of people forget that.
I didn't even know that.
The negotiations started officially last July. People don't always remember that. And what the other side, the AMPTP, offered us was nothing. They offered a 35-page proposal that was $170 million in rollbacks. And stupid, silly things like you can no longer fly business class. If you go to a set, you have to fly coats. Or you can't have advertising on the, you can't get your credit on the newspaper advertising or on the poster. It was obviously designed for us to say no, to not take seriously. And they said, well, if you don't want that, then our other proposal is that we, the streaming, the downloads are at the same rate as the DVDs, which we knew we hated, and we study the idea of new media for 3 years and everything else remains the same. Well, we weren't going to accept that at all.
Yeah.
So therefore, there was nothing to talk about. We had proposals which were very fair, very rational, and very doable. They wouldn't even look at them.
That was then. This is what's going on now. Explain what the terms in the proposed agreement are now.
Well, now, they said they didn't want to give us anything in new media. We now have jurisdiction in new media. They wanted to give us residuals based on producers' net or based on a formula close to the old DVD formula. We asked for distributors' gross. We are getting distributors' gross. The difference between that is producers' net or producers' gross is something that you can fool with in the accounting.
Yeah.
It's like anybody who's had a deal in Hollywood, especially writers, can negotiate net profits. Well, the definition of net is longer than the Bible, and you never see these net profits because of the Hollywood accounting, which is unlike accounting in any other business in the world. So we knew from the beginning. Nick Counter, who was the negotiator for the AMPTP, president of the AMPTP, he came out in the early talks and said, actually, we don't like residuals. We'd like to get rid of residuals completely. But if we don't do that, we would like residuals now to be based on profits. And we knew right away that that was silly. And I wrote a piece for POV on the member news. And in that piece, I basically ended by saying Nick Counter should know that writers, at the very least, are intelligent. And at the very most, we're really intelligent. And we're not going to read this and take it as anything but a slap in the face and as an insult. And Nick had a habit of doing that. Every time he opened his mouth, spewed out was glue that put us even tighter together, that made us writers stick together even harder. It was really quite amusing to listen to all his comments.
So overall, how are you feeling about the proposed contract?
I think the contract is a good one. As people will say, it's not perfect. No one expected to get perfect. Anyone who's been involved in any negotiation knows that it has to be give and take. That's the point of a negotiation. But we achieved our major goal. And our major goal was jurisdiction over new media, which is going to become old media within years. Maybe seconds. It's moving so fast. Everybody's head is a twirl. So we've got jurisdiction. And what that means is when they make new media, it has to be a WGA writer. He gets paid in his pension and welfare. He gets paid a certain minimum or a negotiated fee. Separated rights, which is something we've always had since, I think, the 60s, that we sell our copyright in what we write to the studios, but certain rights are separated out. For example, if we write a screenplay for a movie and then they decide they want to make a Broadway musical out of that movie, well, they have to come to us and negotiate more money because we own the theatrical rights. We own certain publishing rights to the story, et cetera, et cetera. And we now have that in new media as well. And that's very important to writers.
Do you think the average person, general public, knows what the deal was, what the situation was before? And do you think they understand how it's changed now?
Those who are interested, I think, understand. There's a lot of people that I'm sure don't care. But those who look at it, understand, one, that it was a basic issue of writers' rights to their own material. you know, a novelist or a playwright never gives up their copyright. We do in the motion picture industry. And probably have to by the way it's structured. Okay, that's fine. But we retain certain rights, and one of those rights are to receive compensation throughout the life of the piece that we created or kick the ball going to create, because we don't film it unless we're also a director. But we started the ball rolling. And as the studios can continue to exploit that work, we should continue to get a little piece of the action. It's not like any other business. When you make a can of peas, if you're working in a pea factory and you help make a can of peas, once that can of peas is sold, that's it. No one's ever going to make money from it again. But I can write a screenplay and a movie can be made. And then it can be distributed overseas and on television
derivative
and
works.
DVDs. And it can be sold 20 years from today, just as Casablanca. Someone is buying Casablanca today in a DVD store. Okay, or someone's...
On the internet, probably.
Or on the internet. Or they're watching it on Turner Classic Movies. Turner Classic Movies is making money, you know, for them. So it keeps getting resold. Every time it's resold, there should be a penny or two for the writer.
Any comments or sentiments about the AMPTP?
The AMPTP is an organization that people don't understand. That's an umbrella organization of the major studios and a lot of 300 and some odd other producers. But there's like seven of the big conglomerate studios. It was organized so that they could have a single face front, especially when they negotiate union contracts. It's almost a trust, which is illegal. And we don't have to negotiate with them if we don't want to.
What do you mean it's a trust?
Well, antitrust in this country has a long history. Like the oil companies all getting together and deciding on prices, or the steel companies all getting together. So that competition that businessmen always say they like, that competition is taken away because they've made an agreement. We're not going to sell for less than this and blah, 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 blah. Well, by all these companies coming together and being one face, they form a trust. That's, in a way, almost illegal. And if we didn't want to...
Isn't that kind of like being slightly pregnant? How is that almost illegal?
Probably because you're not talking to a lawyer. If we wanted to push it, we could have and said, and we could say, we don't want to negotiate with the AMPTP. We want to negotiate with each company individually. In other words, United Auto Workers negotiates with Chrysler separately than Ford, separately than GM. Okay? But it has been to our benefit and their benefit to come together in one umbrella organization on their side so we can make one contract and not have to do all those separate deals. Now, if you know the history of the strike, when they would not negotiate with us, we started doing that, and we made a number of deals, the first being David Letterman's Worldwide Pants Company. But then you have to negotiate deal by deal by deal by deal. It's arduous. It takes more time. But they wouldn't negotiate with us. But that was also one thing we had to do. But the AMPTP, the big CEOs of the big seven companies, allowing the AMPTP to oversee the labor relations and oversee the negotiations without their active involvement, meaning the CEOs, was a mistake.
How so?
Because I think they believed Nick Counter, who was the head of the AMPTP, when he most likely said to them, "Sit back, boys, don't worry, I'll take care of it. And I think we're in a position where we can diminish the power of the unions because we're huge multinational conglomerations now."
Are you in the room? Do you know he actually said that? Do you know that's his actual sentiments?
That has been told to me by people who were in the room. Okay? And it's by the actions, which speak louder than words, it was quite obvious that he never wanted to negotiate. And by not negotiating, he was hoping to bust the union. He was hoping we didn't have the moxie to go on strike, that it would be too painful for us. And part of that can be told by the way they demonized our leadership. They kept trying to demonize our president, Patrick Verrone, and our executive director, David Young, who came from outside entertainment unions. Basically, the mistake the AMPTP made, which made it a dinosaur, was thinking that this was going to be a strike like all the ones in the past, when we were more of a guild than a union.
What's the difference?
We are the Writers Guild, there is the Directors Guild, there is the Screen Actors Guild. A guild has been thought of in this country, not this country so much as this town, as really a guild of artists, protecting artists' rights. A union, which we also are, a collective bargaining unit by law, protects workers' rights. And there's sometimes, in our guilds, we concentrate more on the aesthetics, on being artists, than worrying about the relationship with the employers on those technical matters of pay and residuals and screen credits and what have you. And a guild of artists are not by nature people that often come together. If we wanted to be, part of the mass or the crowd, we wouldn't be artists. Artists are usually individuals. That's partly what defines you. So as the old cliche, and this was used at the beginning of our strike, is how are we going to organize? It's like herding cats. It's a horrible, horrible cliche. And I've chastised several writers for using it. What happened is, and I'll tell you how I got involved with this whole thing, and I became a strike captain, and I got involved early. Patrick Verrone ran for president of our guild, and his platform was, I will negotiate strongly. I will not allow happen what happened in 88, 85 with the DVD, 88 where we had a six-month strike and got some gains, but it may not have been worth it. I will not allow that to happen. I will organize this guild like a union. I will bring in real union organizers from outside. And I thought to myself, wow, I like the cut of this man's jib, right? So I voted for him. But then I also thought, well, maybe he's just a politician, and that's how he promises and nothing will happen. He fulfilled his promises like that. He brought in David Young. They brought in organizers, great people from outside the entertainment who had organized other unions and other actions and other strikes. And they immediately reached out to the membership. Before, the guild leadership had always been sort of, we're the leadership, we'll tell you what goes on, and there was a divide. They started having house parties, explaining what's coming up. They would get members to open their houses and in geographic areas all around, up in San Francisco, and in certain areas in, say, Colorado, where there's some Writers Guild members and places like that. It's not just Los Angeles. And they would sit there and David Young...
A real grassroots is what you're saying.
It was a grassroots attitude. David Young would come out, or John Bowman, or Patrick Verrone, and talk to the members. They would cater a little dinner. And we talked about the issues. We're coming up for negotiations. What do you guys want? They listened to the members. The members were in shock and awe and loved it. And then we knew we were heading towards something. And then they said their plans of what we need to get to make this union strong. And I was fascinated by this, so I signed on early to be a contract captain, because we were hoping to negotiate a contract and not have to go to strike, but that became a strike captain once we had a strike. And that's what happened. They turned it from a guild into a union, and they brought a cohesion to our membership and a unity we've never seen before. I can't tell you how many times on the line or at strike headquarters or in discussions with members, especially members who were here in 88 and in even members that were here in the 1960 strike, who said they've never seen this membership so unified and so together and so strong. And that's what they kept pushing. They also were very smart. They went out and talked to the showrunners because they knew the power in television was the showrunner. And then they talked to the leading screenwriters, and they got them on board to what we needed to do. It was brilliant organizing, absolutely brilliant.
Okay, so you voted for Verrone. How are you going to vote for this?
I'm going to vote for the end of strike, and I'm going to vote to ratify this contract. And then I'm going to vote with my sense of unity, and I'm going to vote with my own actions and my participation to keep the union unified and to keep working for certain things. One thing we didn't achieve, which we wanted to, was to have jurisdiction over reality writers and over animation feature writers and primetime animation writers. We didn't achieve that this time out, but the effort to achieve it will not end. And it has to be done, because the people working in reality TV, you can't imagine the abuse they're going through. Animation is a different question. It's more technical, and it's not so black and white because of the way animation is created and the history of how animation was written from the old Warner Brothers shorts to the Disney features. So it needs more finessing. But eventually, we need to get jurisdiction, because WGA writers are writing some of the big animation features that are grossing $200 million, $500 million worldwide. and they're not getting residuals and they're not getting any contributions to their pension and welfare and their health insurance, and they're not protected with screen credits. They're big movies. They have to be protected.
Can you clarify? Somebody was demonizing the...
Patrick, yeah, here's what they tried to do. They
What was your thought?
They were demonizing our leadership.
Okay.
The other side, the AMPTP.
The AMPTP. Can you comment on IATSE, Tom Short, and their...
Tom Short has obviously never been a friend to this action.
And why do you think that is?
I can't answer that question except by what Tom Short has said. He met with our leadership early on, is my understanding, and begged them not to go on strike. Well, for one union leader to say to another union leader, don't do the only action you have to really protect your membership, is he a union leader? I wouldn't think so. Now, he wants to protect his members, who are basically below the line workers.
And rightfully so.
And what he's not really telling them is that their pension and welfare and the contributions are often based on our residuals. And he doesn't seem to inform his membership of that. So we did a whole process of informing them. I've talked to IA members who were very supportive of us and not particularly happy with their leadership because of that they didn't come out to support us the way the Teamsters did, or certainly the way the Screen Actors Guild did. But that's a divide. That's a divide between, if I have to put it this way, blue-collar workers and white-collar workers, or creative craftsmen and more technical craftsmen.
Let's get personal. What's next for you?
Just before the strike, I'd finished two spec scripts. I'd just gotten them to my lawyer. I'm represented by an entertainment lawyer as opposed to an agent. And we were starting to strategize who to send them to and what to do. And then the strike happened. So that's effort number one. And then there's another deal that I've been working on for a while that could be a two-picture producing writing deal. I'm hoping we can get back on track on that. And I'm a feature writer. I don't write for television. I haven't been invited to write for television.
It'd
be interesting. So that basically, you know, trying to apply my craft. I'm also a novelist and a playwright. So I got to get back to spending the time looking for new representation in the literary field and sending my play out to theaters. All the things a writer does.
Okay. Have there been any silver linings to come out of this whole ordeal?
It's brought the writers together in a way that they never thought could happen, and not just as a unified guild, but especially us feature writers, and this was talked about on the line constantly. We write alone in our little caves, wherever they are, and we go in and we meet with a producer or a director, possibly, and executives, and then we go home. Funny story is TV writer Anna, I carpooled and I drove her to the big meeting on Saturday. And her name is Anna. I'm suddenly forgetting her last name, and I apologize. But she said, the one thing this strike taught me is how many writers live around me. Because I carpooled, I picked up writers within blocks of each other. And she didn't... It's like, we don't know. All these other seed pod people are living next to us. But we got online, we talked to other writers, we shared stories, we became friends. We hug more than we've ever hugged before. We've talked to writers more than we've talked to other writers in the last 30 years of our lives. A community has been born. A community of writers that didn't... And that's what the guild aspect
should
be.
Born or revealed?
Revealed. But a community that's not... people not communicating can't have a community. Now they are. And all we talk about is, one, let's have a reunion once a week. Let's go to Radford once a week and pick it just for
really?
The fun of it. You know, and we're joking, but we don't want to lose touch, and we want to support each other because we know we all have the same issues. So that sense of being a part of something, which again, by nature, writers sometimes don't want to be a part of something. We create our own little worlds,
yeah.
But we've learned the joy of being a part of a community.
Have you come to any other new... It might be the same question in a
yeah.
different way. Have you come to any new understandings or realizations about the business or about the craft of writing or what it means to be in a union that you didn't have before?
Well, I think I discussed being in the union and strength yeah. and unity and a community. The business... I don't know if the understanding has changed, but we're so pleased because we believe that because we were forced to go on strike and show our resolve, we are a stronger force in this industry now. Right, the union as an entity and writers in total. And we hope that's true, because writers, you know, we don't get abused in the sense that, you know, we're being whipped. Although, reality writers, it's close to that. But we've been abused with disrespect. I personally have been blackmailed by a major studio once. And I don't use that term lightly. I was a producer on a project. I was a writer on the project. My first draft with my writing partner, they wanted to go in another direction, bring in another writer. The writer in me said, oh, I don't like that. But the producer in me said, I'm a good boy, let's do it. But my deal as a writer said that if another writer's brought in, there was a payment on the basic agreement. Another payment is made. So I went to my agent and I said, bill for the payment. Doing business. The payment didn't come, and the studio wouldn't say why. And there were meetings, and it was a big brouhaha. Finally, I get a call in the middle of my daughter's birthday party, and they said, okay, fine, we'll send you your money, but you've got to promise not to come to any more creative meetings. And I'm a producer on the film. Now, that's the disrespect. That's the disrespect. And hopefully they'll come to an understanding of how important writers are. And that we can be strong. And that we're going to stand up for our rights. And in between contracts, we've got fights in the next 3 years over constant problems of late payment or free rewrites. Where a producer, because you have a relationship with a producer, tries to get you to rewrite the script before he officially turns it into the studio. Oh, it's not right yet. Oh, if we give it a little more of this, well, I know I can get him to green light it. Now, you have a relationship with that producer, and you may make the personal choice to do that, even though by contract you should be turning in your draft and be getting another payment. But that's a choice you have to make. But there's got to be something set up, and we're talking about a way to do that, where maybe the guild can be the bad guy and finally tell the studio, you have to make this payment now. But, you know, you can be abused that way. And we don't want to be abused. We want to be the creative partners we think we are. We want respect from them, and we will give respect in return. Because, listen, right now, Hollywood studios are masters at distribution and marketing. They know what they're doing. They're not dumb. They're smart people. We stand in awe and admiration of that part of the business. They do it well. We wouldn't want to do it. We would like them to stand a little bit in awe and admiration in what we do in the crafting a story, creating characters, designing entertainment that they can market and distribute and make millions and billions of dollars. It needs to be a creative partnership. We don't need to be at odds with each other. So I'm hoping this strike maybe leads to that kind of a reconciliation. Not just, okay, let's get back to work and blah, blah, but wow, you know, let's go hand in hand here and be a little more of a partnership rather than an adversaryship, if that is a word. If not, I just made it up.
My final question.
Sure.
As we wrap this up, 20 years from now, when your brothers and sisters are on the line for another disruptive technology that fucks up the industry and the way we do things, what do you want them to know about striking and about the creative process and about standing up for what you believe
in? Well, I hope they will know what our members have known this year, that you may not be striking for great benefits for yourself in the next 3 years. You're striking to establish respect and benefits for those who come after you. What you have residuals in new media now because I went out on the line. I have residuals and I have pension and welfare because of men and women who went on the line in 60 and 49 or whenever, 45, to create the union in 1960 to get his pension and welfare and screen credits. And they may not have benefited in their career right off the bat, but I've benefited. And we have a great feeling of the generations of writers that continue. So we're here, and we did partly what we did for those who come after us. So if anybody 20 years from now is listening to this and wondering whether to go on strike, if it's an important enough issue and it's going to protect your brethren 20 years from your day, do it. You owe it because it's been done for you.
Union is union and family is family.
That's correct.
You have been listening to the Writer Strike Chronicle podcast, available for free through iTunes. For more information, visit us at www.strikechronicles.com. To contact us, please call 310-439-8754 or send us an email at info@strikechronicles.com.